Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Beer. Do you like beer? Do you want to learn how to make your own beer? It's time for Just Brew It, brought to you by Niagara Tradition Homebrew. Here's your host, Jeremy White and Bert Deister.
Good Saturday morning. Jeremy White and Bert Deister here on Niagara Tradition's Just Brew It. 1 week from today, the Dude Hates Cancer, the event at Resurgence. Entries are already taking up. We know that for a fact. We know that we're booked up.
Full.
The event is full. So 25 home brews. Get in touch with Resurgence. Check out the Dude Hates Cancer. Cool event. You get to sample and drink all these beers, and someone's going to walk away having essentially won the competition, right? I mean, there's going to be prizes and stuff.
The people drinking pick it. So it's not like a normal competition where it's, you know, how well do you fit a style? But this is cool because it's what beer do you like the best, regardless of style, regardless if it fits the style.
Good old-fashioned crowdsourcing.
You got it.
Whatever one is... whichever one runs out the fastest, that one wins,
yeah,
right?
That's a good bet.
So that's next Saturday at Resurgence for the Dude Hates Cancer, and the proceeds, of course, to a good cause as well. So anyway, this week you can head down to Niagara Tradition, pick up your materials. It's a good brew day. I am in the process of making plans for my next beer. We made the Belgian Wit. That was your mom's recipe.
Mm-hmm.
Finally came out. And before we get to anything else, I had a very strange problem that arose, and I think it worked itself out. I'll ask you if this happens often. So I kegged the beer. You know, the beer's finished. And as I cleaned out the keg, put the Belgian wit in it, gave it 2 days or so to carbonate, and I had cleaned the tubes and everything. And when I went to actually draw it, it was coming out very, very slowly, despite there being a lot of pressure in the keg. I mean, it was up to 30 PSI to try and get it carbonated. And I talked to my friend, my buddy Aaron, who you know. He said maybe your exit tube is clogged with hops or any sort of sediment.
Mm-hmm.
That a normal problem that can happen to a lot of keggers?
And oftentimes what happens when we clean out our kegs, I don't know if you're like me, I don't always actually disassemble them and clean every little moving bit. So what I end up doing is throwing like my Bee Bright in there in hot water, flushing my line, you know, cleaning the keg, flushing my lines out, do the same thing with Star Sand, you know, flush my keg lines out again as well.
Hot water. I do hot water and cold. I'd like to do a couple of rinses just to, you know, get it flowing.
And then what problem with that is, so because we're not opening up the actual posts, we're usually getting stuff caught in the poppet valve. So that's right underneath your plug, which is, again, the plug or post, this thing sticking out of the top of the keg. You actually put your disconnect on. This is pin lock and ball lock. There's a poppet valve there, which is a little plug with a spring behind it. And so what that's going to do is it's going to, when you put your disconnect on, there's another matching one in there. They both open each other up a little bit so that beer can pass through. Now that's a very narrow gap there, and it's a narrow gap around the spring. And so stuff tends to get stuck there. And so it's a quick and simple fix. You can get it all at it all without taking the beer out of the keg. So you want to relieve the pressure, take off the out post, and just check around the poppet valve that you don't have yet. A bit of, you know, trub, hop, anything caught up in there. If it's not there, if you have a good disconnect, you should be able to take a flathead screwdriver, open up the back, check the poppet valve there. And then the next culprit would be the faucet usually. But if you have a second faucet, you can switch the faucets really quick and see if it's still pouring on the other one. That will tell you whether it's a faucet or the keg.
You know what fixed it ultimately?
What?
I just waited a day.
Just waited a day?
I don't know what happened. If the pressure just pushed out whatever might have been there. But the next day, I mean, after a couple pulls, it was fine.
Yeah.
But things to watch for. And I don't disassemble the keg all the way. I know that. I've racked several beers. We're maybe up to a dozen now without ever really going all out and cleaning the keg. I just kind of clean the lines and all that. But I think a lot of bars might work that way too.
Yeah. No, quick flush if they're lucky. Other than that, I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of good bars now do have a keg cleaning service, somebody that might come in once a month, once a week and flush them. But yeah, if they're going between kegs, just hook it up and go.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was my question. So it's that time of year. Oktoberfest. I know, don't punch us in the face. I know, it's still summer. But, I mean,
we've got to start thinking about it.
Right, this is how the brewing calendar really works. We are on to kind of fall beers, and our shows are about fall beers. So we're talking about making a second Oktoberfest, and this is in large part because maybe some of you, hopefully a lot of you, made your Oktoberfests back in March. Because it's supposed to be like a
Oktoberfest margin.
Yeah. It's a good 6-month process to actually get
lagering
it.
Lagering and letting it clean out. And
so if you're going to make one on this timeline, instead of back in March, all right, I'm starting my Oktoberfest in August. What's different about the process making a shorter window Oktoberfest?
Well, because you drank your first keg of Oktoberfest, you no longer have the 6 months you want to lager it. And so using a lager yeast is kind of getting out of the question. We have a lot of people coming in for Oktoberfest right now. And the point I always make to people is before Louis Pasteur, all Oktoberfests were made with ale yeast because lager yeast did not exist. And so if you're looking to make an Oktoberfest, there's a couple things to keep in mind now. One, use an ale yeast. There's two really good German ale yeasts available from Y-Yeast, 10007 and 110. Both are Altbier yeasts. And then keep the ABV low, so it's going to age out and ferment out quickly, and you can still have it for some time in the kegerator. But this is a beer everybody wants on tap during football season, but nobody is thinking about in March. So this is a very common problem, very common beer to make this time of year. It's a common beer for people to make all times of year. But, yeah, if you're just thinking about it, get a move on. And low alcohol, ale yeast, and try to take it easy on some of the specialty malts, too. Back those off a little bit.
Right, that's what I was going to say, is where is your distinctive Oktoberfest? Where are those features coming from? If you're not going to use a lager, you're just switching the yeast. So are the malts the same, just in different quantities?
Yeah, you got it. Just different quantities, a little bit less. And an Oktoberfest is always built of three different malts, Pilsner, Munich, and Vienna. Now, there's extracts of both Munich and Pilsner, so you can use those in extracts. And you probably just want to steep in some Vienna malt and then maybe a little bit of crystal malt as well as chocolate malt. So maybe this should be our recipe of the week.
Yeah?
I think so.
Why not?
I already drank my Oktoberfest, so I need another one.
You couldn't wait?
I couldn't wait. It's a good spring beer, too. Yeah. I'm actually drinking Maybach, which I made in the spring as well.
Right.
And lagered that, but drank the Oktoberfest. Go figure.
What's the time frame on this one? If you brew it Saturday, you're thinking drinkable by...
You can have it drinkable in, you know, your normal 2 to 4 weeks, depending on whether you bottle or keg. But again, even though you're not using a lager yeast, some time spent in the back of the kegerator will really do it well. It'll be crisp. It'll be a little bit clearer. I would say try to get it made as soon as possible.
And one of the things also when it comes to, like, Oktoberfests and making those for the short term versus the long term, the distinctive features, like Oktoberfests, they haven't changed much in the last... 100 years? Like, there's...
There's been some, I mean, and I don't
small
know...
Small variations you can
small,
do?
Small variations. I mean, definitely the one thing is, with German breweries, we tend to think of these big breweries because we see their classic examples here. But in Germany, again, there's much more small-scale brewing. In fact, just about every... Where if you go into England, you know, every brew pub is owned by a brewery, and they only serve that beer, and they might have a couple beers in bottles. When you go to Germany, you know, the beers are all... all the brew pubs are independently owned, and a lot of times they'll serve whatever the local, you know, favorite beer is, but they'll also have some of their own homebrew. And so with, again, like the kind of homebrew and smaller stuff, you tend to see a bigger example, a little more specialty malts, a little more, rich base malt, so to give it a little higher, you know, terminal gravity and a little bit more alcohol. But when you're talking about like the commercial examples, have always kind of been a little bit, thinner and, a little more sessionable.
Oktoberfest. Recipe of the week and a good option for you. We also want to talk about pumpkin beer, because if you're thinking October and fall, people like to make their pumpkin beers, which is actually one of the first times I ever enlisted your help. I wanted to make a pumpkin beer, and you told me, as a new brewer, just don't buy pumpkin.
Yeah, you have to really be a glutton for punishment for the pumpkin
don't
beer.
Buy the pumpkin. You said use cinnamon, maybe cinnamon, nutmeg, vanilla, and
maybe a little like anise in there too, just a touch.
Or even there's pumpkin pie spice that you can just use.
That's what I usually
use. And I used all that, and it came out exactly like you might want a pumpkin beer to taste. So the idea of making a pumpkin beer, a lot of them, I mean, there's some really famous ones. Pump King, people really have a big thing for Pump King when that comes out this time, or in a couple, actually it's out now is what I should say.
Yeah.
It's out now, even though October's still a little bit away. When it comes to those ones, if it says brewed with real pumpkin, you can do that.
You can do that.
Is it worth it for the home brewer? And if maybe if you're just bent on it, screw it, I want to brew with pumpkin, this is where we're going to teach you how to do it.
I was going to say, it was my hardest brew day ever, but would I make another pumpkin beer? Yes.
With real pumpkin.
With real pumpkin, but I've learned from, my mistakes. And you really have to be a glutton for punishment to make a pumpkin beer, because pumpkin is mostly water, cellulose, and sugar. So that's what we get out of it as homebrewers, too. And it's not like a nice, good, hard roughage cellulose that tends to, provide void space like grain hulls in your mash tun. It's the more gelatinous, blobby kind of, good spackling paste that will plug up your false bottom screen or anything like that.
It doesn't break down.
It does not break down. I mean, you can physically break it, but there's no complex starches to be broken down. So the idea of, and that's how most people want to add it. So we'll talk about the different ways to do it. Most people want to add it to a mash because that's what they're used to doing with anything that may be starchy or, a lot of other vegetables, like, some we'll get to in a minute, sweet potatoes can go into the mash. And
for most vegetables, coconut goes into the, like...
I don't know about coconut. No? As a fruit, we'll say, like corn, and other...
It just came to my mind because I had that coconut beer when I was in Florida, and I've been thinking about it ever since.
You have to brew it now for so long.
I know.
But it tends to stick your mash. My worst brew day ever is I roasted, and if you're going to use pumpkin, you want to roast it to try to caramelize some of those sugars to try to get some flavor out of it. I roasted two whole pumpkins for hours, cut them into small cubes, put them into my mash. Mash seemed to be okay. Recirculation kind of slowed down, and then when I went to sparge, it just stuck like a paste. So after, I think, 3 back flushes to try to get it flowing again, then having it immediately jam up, I put all of my sparge water into my mash tun and did a big batch sparge on it, except I ended up leaving it overnight because it was taking so long to get through. So what I did is I put the lid on my mash tun, I put the lid on my kettle, put the kind of hose in there best I could, and I think I had something I had to be at that night. And so I went there and then started brewing the next morning again and kind of took over. It was a great beer. It was actually my kind of like harvest ale. So it had like pumpkins I picked up at a roadside stand, my homegrown hops, and then I served it alongside a winter spice ale, which was a brown ale with 1 teaspoon of pumpkin pie spice, just enough for 1 pie. And everybody at that party was telling me, oh, no, I'm having your pumpkin beer. Here, try it. This is the one. You can taste it. And it's like, no, the big IPA is actually the pumpkin beer. So what you get out of it is you get water and you get sugar. So what it's going to do is it's going to lower your terminal gravity and it's going to give you a little bit more alcohol. That said, there's 2 other ways that I really suggest using it. One, if you want to ceremoniously say you have pumpkin in there, just toss it into the boil. Put it in a straining bag, toss it into the boil, squeeze it out when you're done best you can.
Say I made this beer with real pumpkin.
Yeah. Now, the cool thing to do with it...
You could do that with a matchbox car if you wanted to, right?
Watch out for lead paint. Yeah, but...
Okay.
I think there's a stone soup moral that goes there.
Stone soup. I was going to say, I don't know what made me think... my brain's all over the place. Anyway, I'm sorry.
But I actually like to put the beer inside the pumpkin. So what you do is you cut the open top like you were making a jack-o'-lantern, really cut a well-fitting top, maybe drill a hole in there for your airlock, take a sanitized spoon, scoop out the pumpkin best you can.
You've done this?
I've done this. And it's not my original idea, too, but it looks good. If you want to show the pictures to your friend or somebody comes over and in the sink you have this pumpkin like foaming out and it's like, oh, no, don't worry. That's going to be beer. And you can still cook the pumpkin afterwards. Lend some interesting flavors. But, make yourself a pumpkin fermenter. first step of craziness, then put beer in it fermenting. And then the only trick I can tell people is because of the sugar in the pumpkin, it will never completely stop fermenting inside there. So you have to kind of give it appropriate time, let it slow down, and then rack it over into a carboy to carbonate it and bottle it, and then maybe get another pumpkin to serve it out of.
Gotcha.
Go extreme.
So I want to do this now. I want to do this now. Of all the vegetables you could do this with, I mean, pumpkins, obviously, it's a very adaptive vegetable. So you're going to make it like a jack-o'-lantern. You don't have to worry about the seal on the top. You're going to trust like the CO2 is going to protect it itself.
You got it. It's going to force its way out. You're going to get a pretty good... Actually, every time I've done this, I've had a pretty good seal, better than some of my old buckets on the pumpkin.
You have a blow-off tube? It seems like that'd be the smart thing to do.
It would be a smart thing. I noticed I told you I put it into the sink, which tells you I don't do a blow-off tube, and I usually let it kind of spray a little bit all over the place.
Well, it just seems like if you wanted to, it would be...
It would be easy enough. Yeah. It would save me a mess. I probably should do a blow-off tube.
Now, did you have a pumpkin that fit 5 gallons? Or did
No. It ended up being, I think, about 3 gallons in there. Now, the person that I got this idea from got a couple of small ones, fermented them each in their own small, 2 gallons in a pumpkin, and then actually combined them back into a 5-gallon carboy for the secondary. As far as sanitizing the pumpkin, it's a sealed fruit. You really don't need to. You could put some sulfite water in there if you wanted to for overnight. I just usually go au naturel.
Wow. I mean, this is my favorite thing we've talked about on the show yet.
It's very cool. It's nice. It's cool to see, too, to have your beer fermenting in a gourd in your basement.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. All right. We've got other things to get. You want to mention sweet potatoes, too. Is there anything
different
about those?
Yeah. Well, the sweet potato is actually probably, if you're looking for quote-unquote pumpkin flavor, throwing a half to a whole sweet potato in the mash will give you that pumpkin quote-unquote flavor. Instead of try a lot of commercial pumpkin beers, which is rare, so you're not having that many of these a year. But a lot of them that have this one really has a good pumpkin flavor to it. As soon as I turn around the label, it usually has potatoes or yams in it. And so that's actually what's giving you that kind of vegetably, almost carroty flavor.
Gotcha. A good substitute. All right. Up next, cider, something we have never talked about here on Just Brew It with Niagara Tradition. So we'll get to that. Making cider with some cider kits and just how much a role the apples, and if you have cider apples, which I'm told is a thing, there are apples, then there are cider apples. We'll get to that next here on Niagara Tradition's Just Brew It. Jeremy White here for Niagara Tradition Home Brewing Supplies. You're listening to Just Brew It, which means either you homebrew or you're thinking about it. Wherever you are in the process, Niagara Tradition Homebrew is your source for everything homebrewing. Do what I did. Get a starter kit, and you'll be well on your way. Niagara Tradition will be there to answer your questions, give you advice, and as I try to become a more seasoned brewer, I know I can count on Niagara Tradition to be there with the supplies and the advice I need. Niagara Tradition Home Brewing Supply, 1296 Sheridan Drive, near Military, in Tonawanda. Open Monday through Friday, 11 to 7, Saturdays, 10 to 4, and 24/7 at nthomebrew.com. Niagara Tradition Homebrew. Pay them a visit, and remember to just brew it. All right, back here on Niagara Tradition's Just Brew It, Jeremy White with Bert Deister. Open today at 10 a.m. if you want to go pick up your brewing supplies. You guys have 1-gallon beer kits available.
We do have 1-gallon beer kits now. Those have been very popular. We always had some of our homemade, or homegrown box kits of 1 gallon. We had American Amber, an Irish Stout, and a American Light. But now Brewer's Best has started operating with some 1-gallon extract and all grain kits, and we have those in full stock now too, and they've actually been pretty popular. Not just people starting off, but sometimes full-fledged brewers. Kegerator's full, I want to brew, let me do something weird, 1 gallon.
Easy.
So a lot of people picking up an IPA, taking out the finishing hops, putting in a jalapeno, that kind of experimental stuff.
How many beers is 1 gallon gonna get you?
It's gonna get you about 12.
Perfect.
Yeah, so it's still a significant amount of beer. It's enough for you to play around with, and I often do 1 gallon projects. We talked about the Belgian beers. I do them in gallons and all the time. Ciders, which we're going to talk about in a second, I often do in 1 gallon batch size. There's 12 bottles. It's nice to have some fresh, age some, but you really can play around with 12 bottles.
All right. On to cider. We've not yet talked about making cider. I see cider a lot. If I'm going out to a bar and thinking about picking up, you know, whatever to drink, there is more often than not at least one cider on tap, and I never get ciders. And I want to. I probably should start to just dabble. When I think cider, I think woodchuck, and that's the only thing I think. And you know, I drink a lot.
There's a lot more out there than that, and we have some local, you know, cideries ourselves. Chateau Buffalo produces some great Perry's and ciders and stuff like that, and we see those guys a lot. Carl is in a lot picking up fresh yeast and, you know, minor equipment stuff, but it's really becoming a lot more popular. Not just a seasonal drink anymore, and a lot of people are starting to see apples at, you know, farmers markets and stuff like that, and they're coming in, they're asking, is it time to make cider? Not yet. While there's apples ready, most of these apples are eating apples, not cider making apples. Come mid to late November, when we almost are kind of bordering our first frost, then you're going to see a lot of these, you know, like Heritage English apples for cider making will start to ripen. And that's when you want to get to your favorite, you know, mill, whether it's like Blackman or Cherry Bank or Red Barrel Mill, and they'll have cider for you. And you might want to ask about like special cider for cider making. So usually press that simple. You'll find some great cider and you can make cider with it, just what they have in the gallon jugs out front. Again, you kind of want to wait till later in the season because the sugar content's going to go up. But you can make some great cider out of that, but it really won't have that kind of flavor that real cider-making apples have after fermentation. They'll kind of lose a lot of the aroma, a lot of the flavor, where cider-making apples usually have flavor left over. So it carries them through fermentation. They still have a good flavor and mouthfeel afterwards. If you want to start trying this, we do have some new cider kits with both like American and English and you know, some different blends of cider making apples and fruit juices. They work very similar to one of your beer kits, except everything is in one big bag. It's just one big bag of juice. You pour it into your fermenter, rehydrate it, and go from there.
Oh, that's it. So there's almost no real
work. And when you pick up juice, which is what most people do, there's not really a lot of work either. You usually either drop off a bucket, they fill it up, and they put it in the refrigerator for you. You come back a day or two later, pay for it, and take your bucket. Or you're like me, and if you're, you know, getting there late in the evening, you didn't bring your bucket, you're grabbing just a bunch of gallon jugs, pouring those into a fermenter, and adding yeast, and it's as simple as that. Now, if you're going with actual fruit, you both have to crush the apple. You have to then squeeze the apple, and you want to do this all with sodium metabisulfite so it doesn't oxidize or sour. Then you have to let it sit there for the sulfates to dissipate and then add your own yeast. And that's a lot more work, and really the crushing of the apples is tough. You kind of want a tool for that. We sell them.
Right.
If you're going to, you know, you've got a lot of apple trees, but most people are making it just from the juice. And there's a wide variety of juice you can get your hands on. So yours isn't going to taste like everybody else's just because you're using juice.
Hmm. And you could, what kind of additives could you toss in there? Really anything you want?
Spicing is obviously popular. People make apple caramel, so boil down some cider into like a caramel and add that back in. I usually just do a little maltodextrin.
I was going to ask, is it welcoming to different spices? If I decided I want this cider and I've never seen anyone do this before, but I want mine to be a vanilla cider or I want mine to be, you know.
It works well with a lot of different spices and a lot of different flavors, fruit flavors as well. Honey. One thing you want to consider with the cider is how flavorful is your apples? Is it going to kind of withstand the, you know, spices? And you might want to make a tincture, soak the spices in alcohol or boil them on the side and add it to taste at bottling time. That's always a safe bet to kind of make sure you don't overspice anything.
Very good. All right. So if you want to make ciders, there are new cider kits available at Niagara Tradition. On to our question of the week. It comes from Dan, who wants to know. He recently made a blueberry wheat using 12 pints of blueberries he bought from a local market, pasteurized the blueberries before adding them. After a few weeks, the beer exhibits more of a wine-like taste than beer. Strongly considering experimenting with the beer to turn it into a sour. If I wanted to turn a beer into a sour after about a month of fermentation, is it as simple as adding the Brettanomyces lactobacillus?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yep.
And aging the beer for 12-plus months, or do I have to do a few things earlier in the process? Starting gravity was 105.8. Current is 1010 for an ABV of 6.3%.
Gotcha. Well, one, for advice for next time, I would add a bit of American dextrin malt, or you could still put maltodextrin in it to sweeten it back up. That will help get rid of the wine-like flavor, which is really you're tasting the booze and tasting the kind of, you know, the alcohol in it. Yeast nutrient, I doubt he has any, with that much, has any phenolic flavors, but sometimes if you're using a lot of fruit, more than you are barley, you want to use some little bit of yeast nutrient, so you don't end up again with any, like, you know, heavy phenols from stress fermentation. But because, yeah, it's now, this has been, we were talking a bit about sours, and we talked a lot about the pH. Now, that's because we were doing in wild fermentation, and we didn't want any of the nasties, like, E. coli bacteria to get in there. Now, this is a sealed fermenter. He's talking about putting in pure pitch cultures. It is as simple as racking it over to a secondary. Give it another week or two. Just let any sulfites or major CO2 levels die down. And then, you know, get a fresh pack of, I think, lactobacillus would probably go best with this. Now, I tend to like the yogurty flavors that lactobacillus give off when it combines with fruit. So that's probably what I would go with here. But yeah, add it in there and then let it sit. It's going to begin to drop the pH. That's all you really need to do to get started with it. I would just probably keep an eye on the pH to make sure it doesn't drop to the point where it gets too tart and you have to blend it back. You can stop the lactobacillus with metabisulfite, and I've had good luck with that in the past.
What might have been the original problem for a beer that ends up tasting more wine-like? If you put
more wine-like, it's usually just, he said he had a 10-10, 10-10 finishing gravity.
Yeah.
That's a 1.010, which probably wasn't, like, if it was, light pale ale or cream ale, would not be
blueberry
too dry.
Blueberry wheat is what he was
going
for.
But, yeah, it's a blueberry wheat, so that's about 6.5%. So you're literally just, it's a little bit boozy. The wheat plate probably made it a little bit tart.
Too much blueberry?
And so was he a little bit too, it's hard to say. It's hard to say. That's all I'm trying to put a weight on that. If each pint weighs, like almost a pound, that's a significant amount of blueberries. And I don't like to say it's too much, because when you're using real fruit, it takes a lot of that real fruit to get any flavor in there. But because of all that sugar is going to be gone, you just have to match it in your grain bill. So a little bit of American dextrin malt, or in that case, I probably would have used a whole pound, which would have got you another about 6 to 8 points of finishing gravity, kind of bring you back up into your normal fruit beer range. Mm-hmm. On the terminal gravity. But that's about it. And sometimes a wine-like flavor can come from a lack of nutrients, because beer yeast wants diammonium phosphate that comes from barley. There's not a lot of other sources of it. So anything that's not barley-based, they do risk kind of giving off some, we call them hot flavors.
All right. Thanks, Dan, for the question, and best of luck with that conversion over to a sour. That does it for us. Reminder, The Dude Hates Cancer is next Saturday at Resurgence.
Full of brewers, but not full of drinkers.
Yeah.
So come try our beer.
Exactly. Come drink the beer. You've got one in there. Your smoked.
We've got
porter.
One in there. Yeah, there's a lot. I've seen a lot of people talking about, a lot of people coming in and kind of picking up dry hops. So a lot of, kind of, if you want to know unique IPAs, this is a great place to go. And you'll have the brewer right on the other side there. So if you want to ask him, when it went in this, how did you do this?
Yeah.
They'll be right there.
I'm looking at my calendar. I have nothing going on. I'm going to buy tickets right now, that I'm thinking about it.
Cool.
That's Buffalo's The Dude Hates Cancer from Resurgence. We'll be back next week on Niagara Traditions Just Brew It. It's Saturday. It's brew day. So go brew yourself.
Beer, 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 beer.
You've been listening to Just Brew It, brought to you by Niagara Tradition Home Brew. Whether you're a seasoned brewer or just want to get started, visit them at 1296 Sheridan Drive in Tonawanda or online at nthomebrew.com. And be sure to tune in next week for another episode of Just Brew It. built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.